Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the award-winning app for WDIY. Just a couple comments on that. Had a few people ask today, you know, what do you think? What do you think? Well, there's a lot going on. Events affect the market. We see this from time to time, ups and downs. If you look at your portfolio from a year ago, were you happy a year ago? Because chances are your portfolio may be higher today than it was a year ago. That's just a way to kind of get perspective on it. I notice myself when I, you know, go on CNBC and it's talking about the activity for the day or the year to date. It looks much more dramatic than if you look at the five-year returns on any of these indexes or even the three-year. So try to keep things in perspective, as we always make sure folks have an emergency reserve. You want to have your nice emergency reserve. And if you have big anticipated expenses over the next 5 years, especially those who are closer to retirement, you want to make sure that those are maybe a little bit more conservative so that you're not having to pull out of the market during periods of volatility and you know, have to realize those losses. So let's just watch and see what happens. I know Warren Buffett, you know, and in conferences he has had, you know, has always referenced he's been through a lot and, you know, he still is in the market. So our topic tonight, though, is listeners' tax questions, part two. We did this a couple weeks ago. So listeners, it's open mic for you. If you have questions, the phone number to call in is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Eric is in the studio. He'll take your call. If you want to come live on air with me, that's great. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Eric and he'll write it down and he'll bring it in to me. And a number of you have been using the yourfinancialchoices.com website to submit questions. So I will cover a couple of those as well tonight. Sometimes the questions aren't always necessarily related to the topic. I try to respond back to people, you know, via the email as well, and don't always read all of those questions. But I really appreciate when you use that to send questions for me, because it also gives me show ideas, which I really, really appreciate after doing this show for so very long. I like topics that you're interested in hearing more about. So tonight, again, if you want to talk live on air, please mute your radio so you can hear me and we can talk without confusion. Tonight's topic, listeners' tax questions, some quick reminders of some items that I had mentioned a couple weeks ago. Reminder that the due date of the tax return this year is April 18th because of Emancipation Day. Maine and Massachusetts have a due date of April 19th. Education credits, tuition and fees deductions no longer available after 2020, but they did increase the limitations, the income limitations for other education credits like the lifetime learning credit. And more people will qualify for that, we expect. And that's really nice. And a lot of people might not even realize that that could be something available to you if you're doing some form of continuing education. It could be grad school, PhD, you know, whatever. The American Opportunity Credit is an awesome credit, but that is for a four-year education, and you can only get that for four times if you qualify, whereas the Lifetime Learning Credit, you could get like every year. So just be aware of that. And then some other hot issues we have, the economic income stimulus payment. If you didn't get it, you do get that through the recovery rebate credit. There were advanced child tax credits. You should have received a letter to say what you got. You have to reconcile it on your return. This year, everyone has to answer a question about virtual currency, whether you have it or not. You have to answer, were you engaged in transactions involving virtual currency? So those are just some of the little items, I think, that I wanted to remind people of, to bring some attention to, since we are talking about tax questions again tonight. I hope to touch on the identity protection PIN. I want to talk about free tax filing. There is also something regarding, you know, IDs. And I had a listener ask some questions about some long-term care, so I hope to get to all of those. But most importantly, your questions. 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org. Or call 610-694-8100, extension 4.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. Podcasts of prior shows are also available on the WDIY app or at WDIY.org under Public Affairs. So, folks, listeners' tax questions, if you have them, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can call and talk live on air with me. And if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Eric, and he'll write it down and bring it in to me. Just some real, high-level questions that we get quite often is things like, do I have to have my receipts for my charitable giving? And just kind of broadly, if you are not someone who itemizes your deductions and you take a standard deduction, ordinarily charity was not an above what we would call an above the line deduction. But because of the pandemic and the American Rescue Act, and I don't know if that was the exact one, but they are allowing above the line charitable deductions, monetary donations to charity of $300 a person. So if you're single, it's $300. If you're married, filing joint, it's $600. And yes, you should have a receipt if those monetary donations add up to $600, and you have to have a receipt if it's $250 or more, but you don't have to submit that receipt. Just keep it in your records. Otherwise, like if you do, let's say, $600 donations, you don't have to have a receipt for that from the organization necessarily, but you should have the canceled check or the credit card bill or something. But let me tell you, I have never seen a charity that doesn't give you a receipt, because that's their opportunity to send you a note. Hey, thanks for your $25. Hey, can you give more? I mean, it's almost always in the literature that they send you, and even if it's under $250. So have proof that you made a monetary donation. It does not count if it's to personal property, Goodwill, Salvation Army, that kind of thing. It's literally monetary donations up to $600 you want. Now, if you are itemizing and itemizing using Schedule A, you might have like high mortgage interest. You might have, taxes that get capped at $10,000. You might have medical expenses. If you're deducting charitable deductions that way, then the same rules apply as far as the receipts, but to the Goodwill, Salvation Army, personal property, the bags you're taking in, that if you're doing more than $500, you have to have a receipt. You have to have it dated and with a description of what you've donated. again, you keep those receipts, you don't submit them. But why you have to have the receipt is because on your tax return, if the donation of non-monetary goods is more than $500, you have to file a Form 8283 with the name of the organization, the address, the how you valued it. Typically, it's thrift shop value, the date, and a description. If you're doing something like appreciated stock, the same thing happens. You have to fill out the Form 8283 and describe that there. So obviously a lot, what I would say, more vigilance in having the backup for the Form 8283 because that's bigger deduction, itemizing. You want to make sure you have all of your I's dotted and T's crossed. Okay, we had a call come in from Phil McCungy, and he said owes tax but did not pay yet. Are there short-term options, or do you pay all at once, or are there other options? So I think Phil is describing that he owes quite a bit of money, so, you know, a big chunk, and didn't pay yet. So, you know, sometimes Phil, one of the things that if you were expecting to owe a lot of money and you set it aside in your bank account and you have the money, yeah, the IRS is expecting you to pay it all at once. It's by April 15th or April 18th this year in this case. It's a pay-as-you-go system. So if we earn money in 2021, the IRS is expecting that we're paying our taxes as we go along. That is typical when someone is working and they have wages and your employer withholds wages or you have a pension, the administrator might withhold taxes from that. Sometimes people have withholdings taken out of their Social Security. And that is kind of paying as you go. Now, granted, when people have withholdings, it doesn't mean it's always going to cover all of the taxes, right? Because we might have some other income. We might have some investment income, or we might have Social Security that we didn't have withholdings on, or we might have a pension that we didn't withhold enough taxes on. So just because we have it withheld doesn't mean that it's always going to be the exact amount. It's funny because people will say to me sometimes, they already withheld the tax on this. I don't understand why I owe. Well, if they only withheld, you know, $2,000 on, you know, $30,000, that might not have been enough. So, but it's a pay-as-you-go system. If you've done it through withholdings, they deem that to be made, you know, timely and everything. And if you covered it enough, it's great. If you don't have withholdings or you don't have enough withholdings, then you may be required to do quarterly payments, estimated tax payments. And quarterlies are deemed to be made, you know, timely if they cover your tax due. There's all kinds of safe harbors to avoid penalties on underpayment. So if you paid in at least as much as you owed in the prior year, even if you owe, you know, five figures, you might not have a penalty because at least you did a safe harbor. You paid in as much as you owed in the prior year. So back to your comment. So now we owe all this money. When do they expect it? They expect you to pay it by April 18th. What are the options if you don't have the money? If you don't have the money, then you can enter into an installment agreement with the IRS and ask for a payment plan. And they have various payment plans. And depending on what you would sign up for, might carry different kinds of fees. And I have probably only done this once or twice in my whole career, so I don't even remember the form you fill out to request the installment agreement. But let's pretend you can't find the form and you file your tax return. And let's say you owe $10,000 and you only have $4,000 in the bank. I would say pay the $4,000, file your tax return, and then if you have not requested an installment, they're going to send you a notice saying you owe this extra money, and, you know, here are your options in setting up an installment. So they don't give people, you know, normally, I mean, you have to request, you know, this installment plan to pay taxes if you don't have enough. But if you have the money, yeah, you're supposed to kind of pay it all at once by April 18th. Let me think, what else did I want to say about that? Oh, here's the big thing, Phil. And I love that you asked this question because hopefully it'll help other people as well. I have had situations where people, and again, I've told you I've only had to do this like maybe a couple times in my whole career, but it's because sometimes, you know, people might ask me these questions but don't necessarily work with me. I've had situations where people say, well, I haven't filed my returns because I didn't have the money to pay the tax, so I just never filed. That is like a no-no, because there are penalties for underpayments, but the penalties for failure to file are really bad. So I always say, even if you don't have the money to pay your taxes, file your tax return. File your tax return because you want to avoid the failure to file. And getting an extension also does not extend the time to pay. It just extends the time to file your return. So even an extension will not extend the time to pay. File for an extension if you have to. Pay what you can with your extension. All right? Great question, Phil. Thank you for calling in. Folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Psst! Did you know your phone is a radio? You can tune into WDIY anywhere, on the go, with WDIY's phone app. Download for free from the Apple or Google store and turn your phone into your trusted public radio. The easy-to-use app lets you listen to WDIY on your phone, live, and play all your favorite music programs on demand. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, also available on the WDIY app. We are talking, or taking, I should say, listeners' text questions this evening. If you have any and you'd like to talk live on air, just call in 610-758-8810. And if you're not comfortable talking live on air, do like what Phil did. Give your question to Eric and he can write it down and bring it into the studio. And it helps if you're kind of clear on the question that you give Eric. And I can usually interpret where someone might be going with it. So, and I've had callers even call back and give further clarification if needed. So I appreciate that as well. 610-758-8810. So some other questions about the receipts then. We talked about charitable receipts. Yes, have those. You know, should I keep all my receipts for all my medical? Well, medical, you guys, it's really tough. So if there's a limitation on medical, there's some, it's much more difficult to itemize deductions than it used to be because the standard deduction is so high and that is set to sunset in 2026. But until then, whether someone itemizes or not depends on how much of those deductions that we report on Schedule A add up to more than the standard deduction would be. And the medical expenses are limited meaning what's disallowed is 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. So if you make $100,000, 7.5% of $100,000 is $7,500. The first $7,500 of your medical isn't deductible. And your medical insurance that you pay through any kind of employer plan is not deductible because that's already tax deferred. So when we're talking about medical, it's like out of pocket. And where I see people really getting a medical deduction is typically when you're retired, your income's really low, you hardly have any money, and your medical expenses are through the roof. That's usually when people get the deduction. It also happens when you have people who, you know, are in their later years, still have a great like investment income, Social Security pension, that type of thing. So their income is kind of maybe modest, and then they end up going into a nursing home or assisted living, and then their medical deductions are quite high. So often we will see you know, an ability to itemize deductions then, and you have to have receipts for that too. But until then, if you're fairly healthy, your medical expenses aren't very high, you have a decent income, chances are you're probably not going to get a deduction for those medical expenses, okay? We had another question come in from Manish in Mukunji. 401k allows contributions for Roth IRA. Pre-tax or Roth or after-tax, because there is a limit on Roth IRA. Manish, this is a great, this is why I love listeners' tax questions or listeners' questions, because you really ferret out confusion, which is why I love doing this show and educating people, because there's something called a Roth IRA that does have limits. And the Roth IRA for 2021 and 2022, I think, is $6,000. If you're 50 or over, you can do another $1,000, which brings it up to $7,000. And it depends on how much, if you have earnings and how much income you have. So let's say your income is within the limits, you can do a Roth IRA, and that's capped. What you're talking about here, Manish, you've mentioned a 401k. This is fairly newer for people. I mean, it has been around for a long time, well, years, but a lot of employers didn't necessarily adapt it as part of their 401k. And to distinguish the difference between the Roth IRA I just described, the $6,000, maybe $7,000, to distinguish it from putting money into a Roth feature in a 401k, we call that the designated Roth. The designated Roth is when your employer says, hey, yes, you can do what is in essence pre-tax after-tax contributions into a Roth feature of the 401k. That has the same limits as the regular 401k. So if the regular Roth is the $6,000 plus one is seven, the 401k is, it's gone up. It was $19,005 and $6,500. And I ask my listeners to be gentle with me because I'm working in, you know, three tax years here. So the 2021 401k was $19,005 plus $6,500, which was $26,000. Now I think it's $20,000 plus $6,500 is $26,500 for 2022. That is the Roth. James, did I miss my second break? No. Okay, sorry. I just realized I'm in a panic here. That's the regular 401k contributions that you can do on a pre-tax basis where you don't pay tax on it today. It stays invested, growing, and tax deferred. And then when you take it out when you retire, it's all taxable. The designated Roth says, hey, my employer lets me put it in on an after-tax basis to this designated Roth. I can do $19,500 in 2021, $20,000 in 2022 with this extra catch-up, if I'm 50 or over, $6,500. I can put that into a Roth on an after-tax basis, meaning I'm not getting a tax deduction for it today, but then it's growing income tax-free in my designated Roth 401k. It's growing tax-free. When I retire, I can roll that over to a Roth IRA and it retains its tax-free growth. So I'm not getting the deduction today. It's growing tax-free. Manish, now here's the third piece. You mentioned after tax. Many, many years ago, I would say early 80s, people, and people can still do this in certain plans, there is something called an after tax contribution. Sometimes if employees hit certain caps or limits and, you know, testing, their employer may have allowed them to do an after tax contribution, meaning they weren't getting the pre-tax. They might have not had the Roth designated Roth 401k option. They could just do an after tax. That's different than the Roth designated Roth in a 401k. The after tax contributions that someone might make, that piece will stay tax free when you eventually take it out. But the growth on that or any employer match on that, that stays taxable. That stays ordinary income taxable. All right. So there are a number of different elements you could have in your 401k. You always have to look at your 401k statement. Look for that information. Read it. It's very valuable. So, Manish, to distinguish. The limitation on a Roth IRA is very different than the limitation on a designated Roth 401k. Regular limits for the 401k, whether it's pre-tax or Roth, the regular Roth you could do as well. So someone might do a 401k contribution. They might do a designated Roth IRA contribution. They still might be able to do the separate Roth that I've mentioned. It all depends on your income. So if your income, for example, if you're married filing joint and it's under $198,000, you could still do a Roth too. So that tells me if someone's getting their, you know, 401k, funding their 401k and still able to fund a Roth outside of that, you're doing a great job with your savings. Keep up the good work. And Manish, I hope that answered your question. It was great. I really appreciate it. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're doing listeners' tax questions tonight, and those ones that we've had have applied tonight, so I really appreciate it. Again, 610-758-8810, on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm James Johnson. It is 6:30. We have 50 degrees and fair skies. Lehigh Valley weather. Tonight, mostly cloudy, low 27. Thursday, a slight chance of rain and snow showers, high 38. Then a winter storm watch in effect Thursday night with a wintry mix, low 28. That wintry mix continues with breezy conditions Friday, high 40. Friday night, partly cloudy, low 18. And sunny skies return Saturday, high 35. WDIY 88.1 FM, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, your trusted local NPR member station since 1995. Many choices, real voices, and speaking of real voices, Lori Siebert here with your financial choices.
Thank you, James Johnson. Welcome back to the show, folks. If you have questions, listeners' tax questions is the topic this evening. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Another question that came through the yourfinancialchoices.com website was, I am interested in buying I-bonds through Treasury Direct. I have several Series EE bonds that are reaching full maturity. Can I roll the EE bonds into I bonds and delay paying the federal income tax? No, you can't. But it's a good question, because what we used to be able to do back way, way, way back in the day was if we had maturing E bonds or maturing EE bonds, we could defer, you know, the reason we buy E-bonds and EE bonds was to defer paying taxes on the growth on them. And then the Treasury would allow us to defer it even further if we rolled those E or EE bonds into H and HH bonds. Well, E-bonds and H-bonds are long gone. EE bonds, many of you still might have those. They still, you know, you can still buy EE bonds, but the ability to roll over the deferred interest on the EE bonds at maturity in lieu of paying taxes on that income, the ability to roll those over into HH bonds went away many, many years ago. You can't roll bonds into new bonds anymore. And I'll talk more about I-bonds in a minute, but I have a question from Jerry in Northampton. Hi, Jerry. Can you hear me? Might have lost Jerry. I hear the phone ringing again, so maybe Jerry's given us a call back. Jerry had a question on filing electronically. I'm going to go ahead and, Jerry, why don't you try give us another call? And if you don't, I'll answer your question as best I can with the notes I have from Eric. So try giving us another call. Let me finish up on the I-bonds. So the I-bonds, you can't roll over the maturing EE bonds into I-bonds anymore. Sometimes certain EE bonds may be eligible for income exclusion reporting if you're using them for qualified education expenses. I have rarely seen anybody do that either, because there's so many other qualified education expense opportunities out there. I don't often see that, or it's that people don't cash bonds anymore or have bonds anymore, or they forgot they have the bonds. So yes, you can't. But I do want to point out, though, that treasurydirect.gov is a great website if you want more information on savings bonds. It's treasurydirect.gov, and they do have information on I-bonds. So this listener had asked this question because I-bonds right now are paying like over 7%. That's annualized, but the interest rate is actually reset every 6 months. So it doesn't mean you're actually going to get that for the full year. And then there's some other restrictions, like holding it 5 years. If you cash it before 5 years, there's a 3-month penalty. But that interest rate, even annualized, it's based on inflation. That's what sets the I bond interest rate. And that's why right now it's just over 7%. I had written this down, 7.12%. And it says that's for the first 6 months you own it. The Series I bond will sell from November 2021 through April 2022. So keep that in mind. Oh, okay. So Jerry was not live on air. So let me get back to Jerry's question. Thank you, Jerry. File electronically on the computer only printed the last page, but figures did not show up. Page said accepted. 1040 SR, no figure printed. First page name, address printed. Jerry, I think the SR, the 1040 SR, is that new form for seniors. I have actually not even seen that. We just automatically do all 1040s. But if you filed it electronically on your computer and it said that it was accepted and you entered all the numbers, I would expect that it probably was accepted. What I'm wondering is if you did it like online through the IRS's free file website, and I'm not sure it's automatic that you get a picture of the tax return. I have only helped someone with that probably 20 years ago with the free file. I don't recall if they actually give you a picture of the tax return when you're doing it online in that manner. But if they accepted your return, and if you owed money, if you're writing a check or you submitted it electronically, like via, you know, debit, direct debit, or you're getting a refund and you did direct deposit, you know, watch for that to make sure that that will kind of coincide with what you expected when you filed the return. Okay, so I hope that is right. I could understand why they might not show the figures. If you entered the figures and they say it was accepted, that's very interesting. If you accepted, I would think that you would have gotten an alert if you entered something, or it would say, why are you filing? There's no numbers on here. So my guess is you did put in the numbers. All right. So double check, do the cross check if it's a refund or balance due. That would really be, I think, the way to best check if it seems to have gone through accordingly. All right. I hope that helps. All very interesting. To kind of have these questions, things that I'm not as aware of when I'm not out in that world. I have, software that we use, and I've used it for 22 years, the same software, so I know it intimately. But when you go to the IRS's website and they have the ability to do some free filing, Pennsylvania offers some free filing. I had a client ask today, their young daughter got a job and has a W-2, and asked if she was required to file tax returns. And I said, and he told me the dollar amount, it's like $900. So for federal purposes, she would be below the filing requirement. She would not have to file. But I said if they withheld federal taxes, she might want to file to get her refund back. Pennsylvania requires that we file if we make more than $35. So I said for Pennsylvania, she would have to file. And there is a link on the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue's website that allows you to free file. And even though Pennsylvania withholdings, you know, usually match when it's wages and she wouldn't owe anything, you're still technically required to file. Same thing with local. If you have a local and you think, well, they withheld the taxes, I don't need to file. They withheld everything. I don't owe anything. Well, the locals are now administered by, you know, agencies that will, you know, sometimes send you a bill for $25 if you didn't file. So you want to make sure you file local. When I first moved here, I never even had heard of local returns. I don't think I filed a local return the first 5 years I was here. Because I, you know, I didn't know and I wasn't working in the, first couple years. I wasn't working in the tax world. I didn't know what it was. So the locals themselves administered the earned income tax reporting. Now they have agencies that do that. They send you letters. Typically what I see if you get old, you know, if you're older and you retire, if you check the box that you're retired, then typically you don't have to keep filing. They don't expect a return from you after you've retired, and then there's no income reported to them either. So keep that in mind as well. But there is some free filing out there. At this time, I'd also like to then mention, which I've mentioned a couple times now, because I think it was so nice of one of our listeners to let me know this. Now, gosh, I just think I might have lost it. It is about the AARP, Carol Eisenbeiss. She's the District 22 Coordinator for AARP Foundation Tax Aid. And she had mentioned that there is an AARP Foundation Tax Aid locator online, and you can, and you do it by your zip code. And you could also call 1-888-227-7669 and enter your zip code and get more information that way as well for some free tax preparation help. There's certain rules around that. I'm not going to get into that. I've mentioned it on a couple other shows. So there are resources out there. IRS, you know, .gov, go into the search box and type free tax file and get some information there. Sometimes that's income related. Pennsylvania free file, the locals have free file. So if you know your local tax agency is Keystone or it's Berkheimer, you can Google that. Just make sure that you're on a valid site, that you're, you know, watching the links that you're doing. You want to be very, very vigilant in your, you know, cyber awareness for these types of things. All right. Let me give the phone number again, because we still have plenty of time. 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. I did have another question. It wasn't exactly a tax question, but, you know, I can almost tie anything into taxes. And it was regarding long-term care. So I had someone write in to me and had mentioned that they turned 50 this year, that they're in really great shape for retirement and their children's education, but they find themselves with aging parents and some uncertainty about their long-term care plans and their means to finance these plans. So the 50-year-old kids are worrying about the parents being able to afford their long-term care. Okay, makes sense. The parents are both healthy and living at home, but they turn 80 and 76 this year. So to this listener, keep them healthy. Keep them healthy. Take them for walks. Engage them. Spend time talking with them. That's one thing. Stay healthy so that you don't need the long-term care. That's number one. But I'll answer some of their questions in just a moment. But then this got him to thinking, incorporating long-term care plans into their own financial plans. And after looking into the topic for the parents, I now think I need to plan at a more detailed level than I have to date, with considerations for long-term care insurance and other measures. So I'm going to give you a website to go to that I think has, you know, a lot of information. And it is acl.gov/LTC. So ACL stands guidelines for the administration for community living. And this website is a government website through the Administration on Aging. So I'll give that website again, acl.gov/LTC. Lots of information. And I think it's really, obviously, I love when people do their homework and research and be proactive about their decisions. Bottom line, one of the things that I like to talk to people about when they're considering long-term care is, here's my experience. People who've had family members who've needed long-term care because there's, you know, higher risk for strokes, heart issues, Alzheimer's, dementia, those people who've had family members who end up in long-term care facilities or assisted living tend to really like long-term care and want long-term care and want to research long-term care. Even if you have that situation, it doesn't mean you can afford it. Then there's the other group of people whose parents dropped dead. God bless them. They just, you know, heart attack, they're gone. Lived to 99, washing the kitchen floor, and they're gone. Those people never want long-term care. They say, take me out in a boat or something like that. So it's important to understand the situation for yourself. Today, there are all different kinds of options of long-term care. You can buy an individual policy. Sometimes work will have employee benefits where they might offer some type of group access to a long-term care plan. There's also life insurance that can be purchased that is both long-term care and life insurance, so you don't, you know, give away all the money. So a number of options to check out. Get informed, go to that website, see how much long-term care kind of cost, and then you want to look at your budget. Obviously, the earlier you buy it, the more affordable it will be because you're paying for it for a longer period of time. Your parents at 80 and 76 may not even qualify for long-term care that would be something affordable, but you know, you need to understand your own facts and circumstances. All right. So I hope that helped a little bit. Folks, the show has gone so, so fast. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Podcasts and prior shows are also available at WDIY.org and on the WDIY app for about 2 weeks, but on the website for quite a bit longer. You can also find them on NPR.org as well by searching for Your Financial Choices. So some of the other things I wanted to mention, this IP PIN program, your Identity Protection Personal Identification Number, there is information on the IRS's website, irs.gov. You can put in the search box IP PIN, and there is a page called Frequently Asked Questions. What is it? Who's eligible? You know, what if I use it incorrectly? What, I'm a victim of identity theft. Can I get one? And all kinds of information. And it's probably more information than I have time to fill in. I usually try to grab a few things if I don't have enough questions from my listeners to fill in some airtime, but I really am probably not going to have enough time to go through this. But basically what it is if you file your tax return electronically, we just send it in, or you might even file it with paper and mail it in. The IRS is trying to give people a little bit of more protection from those folks who, you know, sit in hotel rooms and bang out tax returns using your Social Security number, requesting a refund. So It's almost like that dual authentication where you get a code sent to your phone. That's in my mind what this is. It's similar, meaning you give your tax preparer, or when you're preparing your tax return, you enter this IP PIN. It's like an extra level of security. The other thing that I had seen, though, that I thought that not to be confused with, and I don't know why they don't, you know, kind of combine these things, is you can set up your own online account at the IRS as well so that you can access your tax records, make and view payments, manage communication preferences, view your balance, view or create payment plans. So to, you know, whose was it? Was it Jerry's question earlier? A number of different things you can do. And that's called ID.me account. ID.me account. So I'm thinking, why didn't they make the ID.me account kind of work hand in hand with this personal identification IPIN thing? You know, why can't you just do it all together? So some differentiation there. But more information obviously available at IRS.gov. If you want more information on that ID.me account, just search that in the box, and there's also information on that and how to do it. There's been a little bit of grief that the IRS has come under because part of the ID.me account required like a photo of yourself. And that raised concerns about identity protection. How do you do that? Is it a passport? Is it your ID? Do you take a selfie? I don't know. And now they're kind of trying to work around that to help people make it, you know, a little bit easier. So, all right, we have another question. Shushi from Quakertown. Lori mentioned I-bonds, how to purchase I-bonds. Where can she purchase and what are the benefits? So, Shushi, typically this is something, you know, that when I've talked to people about, if, you know, there are people who have a lot of cash in the bank because they're nervous. You know, as I mentioned, we always ask to make sure that people have emergency reserves. And sometimes people will have extra money beyond that, you know, because maybe they have some big purchases over the next 5 years. If you're going to buy a car, pay for a wedding, buy a house, you know, that kind of thing, you might have a lot of extra cash. Anyway, so if it's money that you're sitting on that you don't need as part of your emergency reserve, and maybe it's something you need in, you know, 2 years, 5 years, 6 years, but you kind of want, you feel better having it. The I-bonds right now, this really wasn't even on our radar for a very long time because we haven't had inflation for so long. But as you all know, in the past year, we've really have seen inflation, and we've seen it kind of spike a tiny, you know, a little bit. So the I-bonds right now are paying 7.12%. That's an annual rate. And the little asterisk here is that it resets every 6 months. So it doesn't necessarily mean when you buy a bond today that you're going to get 7.12% for the year, because it will reset depending on where inflation is. But Treasury Direct has an awesome website. I mean, some of these government websites, regular listeners know, I really like them. They spend a lot of time working on these. It's treasurydirect.gov, and there's links there, probably a search button too, that you can go to look at I-bonds, and there's a whole page on I-bonds. You have to set up an account at the Treasury, and you can link it to your bank account. You're limited, though, to how much you can buy. So that's the only rub. You're limited. You can set up an account and buy $10,000 of electronic I-bonds. If you have a tax return and you have a refund, you could also buy up to $5,000 of paper I-bonds. And those numbers I've mentioned, it's up to those amounts. They issued these bonds like in $50 increments, if that's what, in fact, it said you can buy like $52.36 if you want, like to the penny you can buy I-bonds. And the little caveats are that it's really a 5-year bond. You'll want to hold it at least a year. If you redeem it prior to 5 years, you forego 3 months of interest on the bond. So let's pretend I buy a bond today for $10,000 and the interest is 7.12 and I buy $10,000. That would be let's just call it $700 of interest if that rate stays the same for the year. Let's say they reset it and now it's paying nothing for the next 6 months. Well, if I got 7.12 for 6 months and zero for the next 6 months, that average, let's just rough it out, is 3.5%. Well, is your bank account getting 3.5%? Probably not. But you also will have to forego 3 months of interest if you decide to cash it early. Now, what you can do with those bonds then is if inflation continues to go up, then the interest rate on those bonds may go up as well. And then you'd, you know, technically, theoretically, I can't give investment advice, would continue to hold that bond. If interest rates start dropping and you're not earning as much on that bond, then theoretically, not giving investment advice, you could cash out that bond, but you would have that 3-month kind of haircut on it if you cash it before 5 years. The tax advantages, well, for federal purposes, it is ordinary income and it's reported on your tax return when you redeem it. Not before that, it's reported when you redeem it. And then it's not taxable for state purposes because any treasury income we have, whether it's savings bonds, treasury bills, whatever it might be, U.S. government secured investments are not taxable at the state level. So that's a little tax advantage there. All right. But all of that, I believe, is discussed on that website. You can, you know, poke around there. And since we're talking about treasurydirect.gov and savings bonds, people, you might have savings bonds. You know, how many of us got savings bonds, you know, for our children? They were gifts. I know my brother bought them for my own children. And, you know, they mature, the EE bonds mature after 30 years. Some of those savings bonds are still paying great interest, 4% maybe. Some of them aren't paying as great of interest. It depends on when they were purchased. That sets the interest rate for the term of the bond. And, you know, if it's getting like 1%, that didn't seem like such a great rate, you know, recently. But now that might be a great rate if your bank's not, you know, if your bank's paying you 0.06%. So if you have savings bonds, don't forget about them. You know, you can go on treasurydirect.gov and do a whole inventory of them. You can enter the information. Really, all they need is the series, which is like EE or I or HH, and then the denomination and the maturity date. And it will calculate the current interest, the current interest rate, the interest to maturity, and the maturity date. And it's a great way to keep track. It's an inventory, a bond inventory of your savings bonds. And if the bonds are matured and you have all them, you can cash them. You should have cashed them, because they're not earning anything anymore. So that is something you certainly want to make sure you plan for on your tax return, of course. And sometimes if the bond, for example, my brother bought a bond for my daughter and he said, you know, Lori or Sally. Well, my Social Security might be on the bond, but if it's or Sally, then it would be joint. I could give that bond to my daughter, who might be in a lower tax bracket than me, and let her cash the bond. So if it's a joint bond and it's in or, it's whoever goes in to cash the bond that reports the interest income on them. All right. So I hope that I love these questions. You guys are doing such a great job tonight. I really appreciate it. And we are coming up at the end. So let me see if I can wrap up with any other comments here as far as tax questions that I wanted to mention to people. This is one about paying a you know, if you file your return electronically, you can do direct deposit or direct debit. For a very long time, you know, I would tell folks, yeah, I've always done direct deposit and you can do direct deposit. And I was always a little bit more leery about the direct debit. Let me tell you why I was more leery about the direct debit, because typically the direct debit might come out when the tax return is due. So if I file a return electronically and I say, yeah, do direct debit, I'm good with that, and I'm filing my return in February, well, by April, I might forget that I don't have any money left in my account, or I might have closed that account. So you want to be really careful if you're doing direct debit, that you want to make sure that you know when it's going to debit. You can typically put a date into the tax software to say when to pull it, and it would be approximately around that time. All right, so just make sure if you're doing direct debit that you actually have the money in the bank account. But I have, as long as I've been able to, and when I have refunds, I have done direct deposit. People have been nervous, like, oh, the IRS will know about my bank account. Folks, the IRS already knows about your bank account. Okay. So just, you know, you're hoping that you're using secure software and you're using reputable software and information and things like that. So, you know, it is tax season. There are lots and lots of tax questions. You can send some through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. If you have more, I will do more shows on listeners' tax questions as we go through the rest of the season. I think I have fewer and fewer as we get into April, of course, but until then, we'll probably do at least a couple more. Next week, I am going to do a show on talking to children about finances at any age. So that is, you know, my question the question about thinking about long-term care for the parents. I had a 50-year-old worrying about long-term care for the parents and then also worrying about their own. Well, that 50-year-old is not only a parent, they're also a child. And parents should be talking to their children about their finances, especially when they may need their help if they become disabled or unable. So talking to children about finances at any age next week. Thank you, listeners. Awesome show. Really appreciate it. Great questions. Keep them coming. Eric, thank you so much. You were very busy tonight. And James Johnson, thanks for all your help getting me here tonight. Folks, coming up next, Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.